Dr. Kit Pietrantonio here. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/Midwestern. That's www.audibletrial.com/Midwestern. Welcome to the Midwestern Social Scientists. I'm the psychologist, Dr. Kit Pietrantonio.
This is the sociologist, Keith McIntosh.
And we have a very special episode today. It's our 30th episode. I just turned 30. One of our guests just turned 30.
That seems to be the theme.
It's a 30-30-30. It's like, who's the Godfather's Pizza guy? Herman Cain. He had like the 999.
999.
It's like, we're 30-30-30.
Whatever happened to him?
Still running Godfather's Pizza?
All right, yeah. Should be running the country.
Should be running
the country. Could have been running the country.
Could have been the Godfather of the country.
Awful close to running the country.
Yeah, but Obama swooped in.
Damn Obama.
Stopped him. Yeah, classic. So, today we have two very special guests. Guests that I've known for a long time. One of them I've known for 26 years.
26 years?
26 years. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
Like, I remember playing with him in there was a restaurant called Hardee's. A lot of them are Carl's Jr. now, but I remember playing with one of our guests in Hardee's Ball Pit when we were 4 years old.
Wow.
I still remember that. Our moms met there, and we played together in the ball pit.
It's a lot. This is like a lifetime of joy and fun and stories.
It was a very long time ago. He's not an engineer, but he's like a statistician of some sort.
Okay.
Who works at a place called Steelcase.
Okay.
And he, works with office furniture.
All right.
Am I correct on that? So, anyway.
he just sighs in the corner.
And, the other guest is a lawyer.
Okay.
Like an ambulance chaser.
Oh, damn.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
that's exciting.
Yeah, like he's chasing down ambulance, being like, hire me, and I'm only take 20% kind of thing, you know? He's like J.G. Wentworth, you know? Like, do you have a structured settlement? Like, it's your money, you want it now, you know? That's what he does for
living. You gotta make a living somehow, right? Yeah. So, now, how do you know both of these gentlemen?
I know both of these gentlemen because they are from a place we call God's Country. A place north of the Mackinac Bridge, a place that is very green, very wild.
Very white most of the year, I'd
say. White, green, very wild. It's the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, also known as the UP.
The UP, okay.
And we've alluded to this place before in previous
we've
episodes.
Alluded to the magical place.
Yeah, this magical place. We haven't come out directly and discussed it, but we talked a little bit about the Michigan episode, which is like our third episode.
Yeah.
But we want to revisit it. We want to revisit the best part of Michigan, which I think we can all agree is not Detroit, is not Grand Rapids, is not Lansing, is not Cadillac, is not Mount Pleasant. It's not Traverse City.
The part that's not even physically connected to most of Michigan.
It's the part that, you know, I would say that Lower Peninsula is not physically connected to the UP, but these guys are a couple of Upers. Well, UPers, we call them Upers. They grew up in Iron Mountain, Michigan,
okay,
which is where I'm from.
Okay.
And we wanted to interview them today to have a episode essentially about growing up in the UP and what that's like. It's a unique place to grow up. And so I want to bring them on now. I'm going to introduce them. They're going to come into the studio right now. I'd like to introduce my friends, two guys I love, Joey Salello and the illustrious Brian Taff.
Welcome. Hey, Kip. Hi, guys.
Hello. Now, first thing I noticed is none of us are in the UP. You have both chosen to go down the bridge to the Lower Peninsula to make your lives. The UP is such a wonderful place, why aren't you there right now?
We like it here, Keith.
What was like? So you met Kip in a pit of colorful balls.
Spent a lot of time in that ball pit.
It sounds like something from the Rugrats cartoon. What was your first impression of Kip?
I guess one of the things I remember, Brian, from like our first interactions was the very first time I went over your house. You had that secret room under the steps.
Oh yeah.
And like you and your brother, like you guys had a bunch of stuff in there, and I remember just being like, this is the coolest thing.
It was
thing.
Like a little hideout kind
of. Yeah. So can you tell us about the little space under the steps a little bit? Because that was pretty cool.
I don't know. It was just like a stairwell that my dad had built in our house, and there's a space underneath it that you could access through like our storage room. And it was just kind of a little crawl space, hangout. We put like blankets and toys and stuff in it when we were kids. I don't know. It just had a little light in it, and we just would hang out there, just kind of like, you know, like a fort.
Sounds like a Harry Potter situation.
Yeah,
were you
absolutely
forced to sleep in it though? Did they lock you in there at night?
No. Nah.
But it was like, you know, kids like to make blanket and pillow forts and stuff like that.
Sounds really
it was
cool.
Kind of like a really nice version of that.
Yeah.
Now, where did Joey come to the picture?
Joey, I don't know. I didn't really hang out with you till really middle school to high school. I think is kind
of. I was over at the Catholic school.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh my gosh!
Shout out to Dax.
Shout out to Dax. So Dax is stood for what, Joey?
Dickinson Area Catholic School.
Okay, and that was the school that was right next to our high school.
It was
like a little baby junior version. Like it was just hanging out, kind of lingering next door.
Yeah.
So.
Did people like, was there sort of cross, did everyone know each other? Or was it sort of like, who are those kids over yonder?
We were the weird Catholic school kids. It was actually fairly isolated. I knew people through sports.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we didn't hang out with a lot of Iron Mountain people.
And did you leave the school at some point and then went to the normal school?
Yeah. So there's no Catholic high school. There's barely a Catholic school to begin with. I think I had 12 kids in my class. So after 8th grade, you had to pick a high school.
Was that weird to like join the heathens and the pagans in the normal high school?
Catholic school kids were the worst.
Really?
Yeah. Always the worst kids.
I noticed that in like middle school, before you had to go to Iron Mountain High School because Catholic school didn't have a high school, that some kids chose to like assimilate themselves into like Central Middle School before, like a couple years before, like Tom, I think, did that. Tom Toriano.
Didn't Pat do it too? Did he come a year early or something?
Maybe.
Yeah, that was normal. Our class, we didn't have that drop off, but a lot of classes, I know my older sister's class, a lot of kids left in like sixth grade. That was kind of the thing. Sixth grade was when you'd lose a handful of people.
Just because they figured it was coming to an end anyway, so you might as well like make friends.
I think their parents, that you pay a tuition. I don't know how expensive the tuition is, but I think a lot of parents at a certain point are like, all right, they can go to public school now and it'll serve them well, so they're not just jumping into high school.
That makes sense.
Having to, you know, find their way, make friends, and make good decisions at the same time.
Yeah. So you came over, and I remember being drawn to you, or like relatively early on, just because I like the clothes you wore, the music you listened to, like your style. It was very clear that, like, I remember being like, "Oh yeah, this is like a person I want to have like a friendship with." You were not like a standard football playing, you know, like jock at the school or something like that. So I remember being
not
like,
big
"Oh."
Enough. To do that.
Well, and I remember very much thinking like, oh, this is a cool guy. Like, I want to have interesting conversations with him. And I think that the first time we really had serious interactions was probably in that business law class.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Ducat, right?
With our gym teacher who taught business and law.
We had a business law class.
We did.
For a hot second there. Yeah. I think it was maybe like a one-off class. I don't think that was
and our gym teacher taught it, which was so awkward.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was I think that's kind of how our first. So Brian going back about 26 years, Joey maybe going back about what, like 15?
Yeah.
16 years
roughly.
Now? Yeah, a long time. Think about it. So let's talk about.
I knew your mom before I knew you.
That's true.
Substitute teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, most people did know my mom before they knew me. That's true, because she was a substitute teacher. A substitute teacher that nobody wanted.
No, she was serious. Well, because if you didn't get your mom, you got Mr. Sugar Pop, who was this local town drunk kind of.
His name was allowed Sugar Pop.
Mr. Sugar Pop. He was an old guy, and he would come
town
in.
Town legend.
Get called in on short notice, and he clearly had been drinking almost every time I ever had him as a sub, but it didn't matter. And he wouldn't make you do any schoolwork. You would play Simon Says.
Yeah.
That's it. High school included. I had him as a sub from kindergarten until senior year of high school. Yeah. He would be teaching, substitute teaching like an English class in high school. And he would just come in and you'd play Simon Says.
Yeah. Well, or I remember he would be like, okay, here's the deal. You guys finish this worksheet and then I'll tell you a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that alone was like, let's hurry up and do this because Sugar Pop's going to tell us a story.
He was like, an unbelievably funny storyteller.
Hilarious. Yeah. And there was something about it that was like, I'm not supposed to be hearing this because it was probably inappropriate.
Yeah. But well, the other thing about it I think that was so cool. Well, you know how they talk about like Kris Kringle, like Santa Claus having that like twinkle in his eye?
Yeah.
Like Mr. Sugar Pop had that twinkle in his eye. There was just something about him that you were like, I'm not scared of this man at all. Like, he's like clearly an adult who's like got issues.
Yeah.
But I really want to be like, I want to hang out and listen to his stories and listen to him talk.
So and parents were okay with it. I mean, the school board was okay with it. Parents were okay with it. I feel like you don't get that most places in the country.
Yeah,
that I mean, that would be like a no-no right away. It'd be like, no, we can't. This is ridiculous, right?
Yeah,
but like, it just was okay.
Yeah. It's very still interesting.
Happens. I seem to remember
he's still doing it. I don't know why he would have stopped.
Yeah, I remember my mom saying though that teachers didn't like it because nothing got done when he like he came. So teachers were often like, oh god, like they got him. You know, like,
yeah.
We're not very happy. And that was one of the reasons at Iron Mountain they like implemented like teachers being like, I want to recommend this sub. You know, and they would go for that. So I remember my mom was always playing a competing game of like, oh, this person really likes me, so they're going to recommend me and things. So I guess starting the conversation, shifting it back to growing up as a Youper, first thing I thought, I thought we'd dichotomize. We talk about two parts of it, which is kind of what the perception of growing up in the UP is, as opposed to what really growing up in the UP is. Because I think when you go downstate, like when we say downstate, we mean the lower peninsula of Michigan, you basically, the people must be like, oh, you must love hunting and fishing. And like, do you go snowmobiling all the time? And like, you must love the outdoors. And I didn't really think, I mean, that was part of my growing up, but it's not like that's all I did was go hunting and fishing or anything. Like, that's actually something I rarely ever did growing up in the UP. So maybe first let's talk about like kind of what the general perception of growing up as a Youper is.
I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. The rational people would think of someone growing up in the UP as all the things you named. And then you had the people that had never been to the UP and were like, how do you get to school? And do you have to ride snowmobiles to get places? Mm-hmm. Like, you guys don't have running water, do you? Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of absurd. I think that the perception is just that it's this vast wilderness where there's just barely a society.
Yeah. I mean, from like the lower peninsula, the reason you'd go up to the UP is to like hunt or to go four wheeling or something like that. So you just sort of assume, well, I guess the folks who live up there must just do that all the time.
Even people from like Wisconsin or lower Michigan who go to the UP for something like that, they don't go to one of the bigger towns. They go to a tiny little, you know, one stoplight town, or they are out in the wilderness somewhere because it's on a hunting trip. So like, people's perceptions, even if they've been to the UP, is like, oh, I only know this one thing, so like that's just what I think it's like. Like, I had friends from the Grand Rapids area that went up to Iron Mountain with me on like trips to go to. We have like a ski jumping tournament in Iron Mountain every winter, and we'd bring them. And I remember one of my friends like saying like, "Wow, this is not what I thought Iron Mountain would be like at all," because it's like it's a bigger town than people think. Like, it's not all that different from suburb cities of Grand Rapids.
Right.
I think that all the time where even when I'm driving anywhere north of the city, you get, you know, 20 minutes out of the city and I see all these small towns. And, you know, I think like these towns are so much smaller than what I grew up in. And you meet people all the time living here that, you know, grew up in White Cloud, for example. And you can compare, you know, I had graduated with this many people in my high school and this is what my town was like. And yeah, I find myself being kind of surprised at how many small towns in lower Michigan are really, truly like one stoplight towns. And Iron Mountain was not that. I mean, it was.
So I think Iron Mountain was, I think around the time that we were living there and going to school, like population of like 10,000 probably. It's probably closer to 7,000 now. Because not a lot of people our age are living
sticking
there,
around. There must have been there. Some feeling though of being like kind of stranded in a way. Like, I mean, you really just, if you look at a map of America, I mean, you can't get any further sort of north or obscure. Yeah.
That, so, I mean, the isolation is, I mean, that's the reason why I'm here and not there. That was, you didn't realize it growing up, or I didn't anyway, so much, but moving away and the thought of moving back, it's a long car ride to the next city. Like, yeah. I think that,
like, Green Bay is
which Green Bay is not a big city.
Yeah,
I mean, it's mm-hmm. It's a very small city. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's the closest legitimate
that we would consider city. A big market town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It was. I remember that was the trip every year. My parents would we'd go to Green Bay and go school shopping because that's the closest.
Everybody did that
because it had a legit mall and mountain area. Definitely did not.
Well, and I think that maybe it shifts us into the other part of my dichotomy that I brought up, which is what was it really? Because it wasn't just fishing and snowmobiling and hunting and, you know, pretty much living the Lower Peninsula person's northern vacation all the time. I mean, realistically, one of the things that I thought growing up was because of the isolation, because there wasn't a mall to go hang out with or hang out at, you realistically had to develop very good social skills because so much of your time was just sitting talking with your friends in various locations. Like, you didn't, I mean, you went to the movies or you'd go, but so much of our time was like, so you want to go sit here? You want to go sit there? Like,
yeah.
So much of my childhood was like riding bikes around the town, like anywhere we decided to go. And it was just be like, just shooting the shit kind of and riding bikes everywhere and then like hanging out at like Hardee's or whatever. So it was just like, you get your really close group, a close knit group of friends. Mm-hmm.
Like little gangs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd interact with other groups every now and then. And that was a huge part of it, which I don't think is necessarily unlike kids down here where maybe they're hanging out at the mall, but I'm sure it was similar in the sense that it was everyone has their tight-knit group of friends. Maybe it's neighborhood friends or school friends as you get older. And it really wasn't all that different. Played a lot of video games.
Yeah.
Rented movies. You know, it's... did the same stuff.
But here's where I'll differentiate a little bit, Joe, because I had this experience when I first was in the dorms at college, right? So I went down there, and there's a big mall in Grand Rapids in this town called Granville, right? Yep. And I asked two of my friends from Detroit, who were like my neighbors, and I said, hey, do you guys want to go to the mall? And they were like, no, I don't really need anything. And I was like, really dumbfounded by that idea. Like, I was like, yeah, I don't either.
You just wanted to go there to hang out.
Like, why wouldn't you want to... We're just going to do something.
Because you have a mall now. Mm-hmm. It's like...
Right, and not just that. Like, the goal wasn't to actually go to the mall and buy anything. Yeah. It was just like, hey, we're not doing anything. You guys want to go do something just to do it. And it was so clear that the value for them was not in going to the mall. The value for, or like, was, it was all about going to the mall and getting something for them.
Yeah.
The value to me was about the relationship.
Yeah, it's a large area to walk around and talk. We used to do that. That was something you would call me up and say you want to go to the mall, and we would just go walk around the mall, maybe go in a couple stores, but it was, you know, just a place to kind of be out walking around and talking, because that's a good point.
Yeah.
You really feel like there's like stronger social skills because you were forced to hang out more and like...
Well, I mean...
The source of entertainment was your friends instead of like whatever else.
Yeah, I do. Like, because I think what's happened, and you guys can tell me because you guys have been down here a long time, is when people meet a group of us, they're always like, you guys are so friendly. Like, you guys are so nice. Like, and people like... And I'm always like shocked by that. I'm like, aren't other people friendly and nice? You know what I mean? There's always this perception like, you guys are so easy to get along with. And I don't know if that's like a personality thing or something, or if it's just like a... I don't know.
I think about, we have our group of friends down here, some of our best friends that we've known, you know, for 10 years, grew up in Granville and went to high school together in Granville. And I kind of think about what it's like to get a group of people from Iron Mountain. It could be any combination of, you know, 30 or 40 different people together. And it's just, everyone shares stories and has this familiarity and comfort with one another. And I feel like, you know, and I really don't know, but I get the impression that like with Marcus and Phil's group, it's a little less of like this, you know, free flowing friend group. It seems like they had their tight knit group and, you know, they obviously have acquaintances, but, Yeah, it just seems different. But maybe that's because I'm part of one and not the other.
And it's hard to say if that's like, you know, the way, like you said, we just seem more approachable and friendly, whatever. If that's like part of like our growing up in the UP, or if it's that's just like the type of people we are. Mm-hmm. Like it's really hard to say. I guess I've never really thought about like social aspects of my life being like different from growing up in a small town compared to around here.
Like, I just think about this, like me, you, and a friend of ours named Kyle Bloomquist spent every single day together doing like the exact same things, and we had to not hate each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's an incredible thing to do. And I'm not talking like we did that for like a year. I mean, we did it for like 5, 6, 7 years of our life, every day doing essentially the exact same things together.
We'll ride the bike. Ride our bikes to the lake today.
And really, it had nothing to do with what we were doing. It was just like we continuously built jokes on top of jokes on top of jokes and stories, and like anticipated things together. Like, oh, this video game's coming out. Let's talk about that for like weeks in advance and everything. And like come up with ideas and thoughts and like philosophies that kids would talk about. And that's like, we really got into that stuff with each other and like had to sustain those relationships. And I feel like people in other places don't need to do that because they're like, oh, I'm in soccer. I'm in this thing. I go to this group. I go to this camp every summer. Mm-hmm. I do all, you know what I mean? Like their lives are more, diversified. And I think there's more
external stimuli.
Right. And so I think the other side, the not good side of growing up as a Uper, is you are really naive.
Yeah.
You know, is that you don't know, like, you, there's all kinds of things that I discover when I move to a city that I'm like, oh shit, like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what that is. Like, I don't. So you even though you have like this really good set of skills with like people, you also are like very kind of stupid in a different way.
Yeah. I still don't like take the city bus anywhere, not because I have an issue with it, just because like I've never like got a comfort level with it. Yeah. So just like this bus that's super convenient and brings you where you need to go. I'm just like, there's times where I'll walk if, you know, for whatever reason I don't have, like, how far have you walked to pick up your truck if you like go out and have a few drinks and you leave it overnight and maybe take like a cab home?
Miles.
Yeah, I'll walk a really, really long way and never consider hopping on the city bus and just getting there.
I wonder if that's a like naivety, like not growing up around having public transportation like that.
Yeah.
I never got used to using it, so I just don't. And I used the bus all the time when I went to school because you could ride it for free as a college student, and there's two campuses, and the Route 50 used to, like, when I lived on one campus, I usually had class at the other, and when I lived at the other campus, I usually had class at the other one, so I was just constantly riding back and forth. So I used that all the time, but after I graduated, I just completely stopped using it. I drive everywhere that I possibly can. I probably drive way too much.
So I think another maybe unique thing about growing up Uper, and you just tell me if this is what you guys think, is the kind of the nightlife of what you do. Because I think a lot of other people, like, we would watch TV shows and there'd be these big house parties. Like, oh, you know, Mikey's parents are going out of town. Let's have a big giant house party with music and stuff. And we didn't quite have house parties. We had something a little different. And camp, I see you guys parties, laughing, man. Already. And first of all, one thing I learned when I came to Lower Peninsula is nobody knows what a camp is.
Everybody knows like, what a cottage.
You have to say cottage.
So is it on a... Yeah, but cottage is on a lake.
Yeah.
It's like you have to literally say like a house where we shot deer out of, but we didn't really shoot deer out of it. It's just, you know... Yeah, you have to get really... There's no... It's like talking about like another like culture where it's like there's no word for that here.
Cabin in the woods.
Cabin in the woods. Yeah.
So what can you guys describe, kind of what is a typical, like, and let's say it's junior year of high school, you're going out to a camp, right? Just start from the very beginning of the night and like where it goes, what happens when you get there, and like how it ends.
Well, I wasn't 21, Kip, so I didn't.
So there's no alcohol involved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So no,
I wouldn't know anything about that.
It's just you get...
just deny everything immediately. Unwilling to talk.
Yeah. It's this weird word of mouth thing.
A lot of times, especially if you were going to someone's camp that you had never been to before, you had to figure out, like, can I ride with you or can I follow you? Or, like, there were a lot of times where you would just get verbal directions, like, go down this dirt road, you know, 3 miles or until you see this, like, Y. And, mm-hmm. like, there's certain times where, like, you kind of get lost for a little bit before actually finding the place because, I mean, also being underage and drinking, people were very wary of, like, we want to go somewhere where the, like, police aren't going to find us and, like...
You know, but unsurprisingly, they usually did. Because you have so many people. I mean, it would be nearing 100 people and from three different high schools, yeah. all of whom are getting there based on word of mouth. And I always had the same reaction when a party would get busted by the cops. In my head, I'm just like, how did they find us?
Yeah.
You know, the same way that everyone else found the pumpkin,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Sometimes it was an adventure just getting there.
Yeah, it was.
Well, in the wintertime, too, it's a lot of, like, fairly unplowed roads, and I remember like a lot of people getting stuck and having to like, push cars out. And
so essentially, you call up your friend. There wasn't texting at the point, and you'd say, "Hey, we're going to this person's camp."
Mm-hmm.
You then get in the car and possibly in a caravan of cars heading out that direction.
A lot of times for like 45 minutes
to an hour, like... and then okay, so what does the camp look like when you get there?
Typically very rustic, like what you normally think of a cabin in the woods. A lot of, taxidermy deer heads on the wall or fish or stuff like that.
Yeah. I always think of the gate having to be opened.
Oh, yeah.
Like a giant orange gate, and that was like our barrier against the police because there was private property, right? So somebody would have to jump out of the car, open the gate, and then the cars would drive in and then close the gate again.
What I think... is the biggest difference between the handful of what I would consider to be a camp down here and what my experience was in the UP, obviously, is when you go to someone's camp, you can look in every direction. You do not see another camp. I mean, you're on acres of land. Uh-huh. And I think that's one distinction. Down here, there's hunting camps and people have cottages and camps, but... I've never been to one down here where it's, and obviously they exist.
Much less seclusion.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, even there, you can see your neighbors. And I mean, that was the point of a camp up there was, I mean, you've got your solitude, which is great. It was this weird sense of, you know, well, I feel safe out here drinking with my friends because we're in the middle of nowhere. We're not disturbing anyone. But the cops always found them. maybe every other party.
One thing I always remember about that kind of like, camp in the woods kind of party is it was always like very inclusive. Like all groups of people would come there. Like, you know, kids that typically didn't hang out together would be there because that was like the one place to go that weekend, you know, like everyone was partying at this kid's camp or.
Right.
And it wasn't even necessarily everyone would go there to socialize. It was like it was the place to go, but like people would go in their groups and then just kind of stay in their groups on like the edge of the woods, and you know, it was there was a good core group of people that kind of socialized quite a bit, but you still had that like just pockets of people that like came and went, and I always wondered sometimes like I'm like I don't know any of those people. Like, what high school did they go to?
I always thought it would have been very stressful to host a party like that.
Right?
Did you ever do that in high school? I don't think I ever.
Smaller. No, never.
I mean, like typical like movie house party style, like where like the one kid who lives there is like frantically running around trying to like make sure stuff doesn't get broken and stuff. Always like didn't want to have to deal with that.
Well, and the funny thing about it too was there were so many times like think about this just from like an anthropological perspective for a second, like. The girls in our class or the women in our class would like dress up and like try to look really pretty to go out to this like deer camp.
Yeah.
It's like out in the middle of the woods. Like they put on like nice clothes and like they would, you know, they look good and stuff like that. But it was like such an odd thing to think about. It's not like they were going out to the club or going out to like a bar, or, like a party. It's like they were literally going to a place where there's fish.
Yeah.
And like deer heads mounted on the walls. Yeah. And I mean, and sometimes these places were basically. Four walls and a roof.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, everyone did. I mean, I wouldn't throw on like a camouflage, like dirty camouflage hoodie and like my hunting boots to go. I mean, you dress up like you're going like now if I were to go out
like
to to the bar with my friends and put on like a nice button up shirt or something. That's how you'd like get ready to drive 45 minutes into the middle of nowhere to a camp party. Yeah. It's weird. That's definitely different. But you're not 21, and I don't know what people did. I mean, here, you could maybe get 5 or 6 or 7 people in a basement watching movies, and you know, maybe you're drinking. Mm-hmm. But I think going back to what you said about this weird welcoming group of youpers that we grew up with, it's such a large group. Maybe that kind of plays into it, mm-hmm. where we all had to socialize at these giant, you know, parties, and we could, where that wasn't an option here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine where someone who grew up in Grand Rapids could go and be around that many people their age.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen. Yeah, that sounds like you paint like a really idyllic picture of it. And the idea of too, that people, like groups that normally wouldn't hang together, are sort of forced to hang out and, like, I guess get along. Yeah. That seems fantastic. I could totally see that would make you kind of more sociable, or just like more willing to get along with people who you otherwise wouldn't associate with.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the small town friendliness thing but it's like, how do you apply that? How does that get socialized into the children of that town, or like the teenagers of that town? And I think that's how it does. So yeah. And then I think the other thing was like, you'd almost always like end up sleeping out there.
Oh yeah.
So, or you get a ride home from somebody, but if you'd sleep out there, it would just be people it looked like a refugee camp or something like that. There would just be people laying everywhere and like random couples who got together would just be like walking out of rooms in their messed up clothes and stuff. That was always like really funny. Like, I'll hang my jacket up on the deer antler and like go to bed here.
There's like people that would like sleep in their cars and stuff too. Yeah. Because there just wasn't space available for the number of people that slept out there.
Yeah. And then there's crazy people who walk 20 miles home. Oh, like one of our friends. One of our friends walked 20 miles to the woods home.
Is it in the winter?
It was somewhat fall, cold, maybe. But yeah, it was crazy.
I know that he fell in the lake before.
Who's this?
Yeah.
He fell in the lake before he left. I think that was like
what, the straw that
where
broke
he decided,
the
like, I'm just going home without realizing how far it was.
Just like kind of just pure determination. I'm doing this.
It seems like that would take like 24 hours of walking.
Yeah, he got there like the
10
next
hours
morning,
later or something. Like, yeah,
it took him like the entire night.
Yeah, it's crazy. So how about this? Another piece of maybe growing up youper is kind of resentment for being where you are. I always felt that a little bit. Anger at like having to see hicks everywhere. That was something that I like really disliked. I hated seeing like Confederate flags being flown from trucks and like hearing like, you know, people like just talk in a way that was very like, I don't need nothing outside of here. The UP is God's country. This is where we live. And kind of like this redneck, like pride in being a redneck. I always really disliked that. And I always felt very like after growing up, I cannot wait to leave. I cannot wait to leave this place. I don't know if you guys felt that at all.
I didn't. I mean, all the things that you're saying, like I recognize that there was some of that there. I think that
just didn't make any sense for people to be flying Confederate flags on the truck.
Let's be honest, that wasn't every truck didn't have a Confederate. No, well, there was like two kids that lived in the town that had Confederate flags in the back of their trucks and would drive around. I mean, that's all it takes, though.
Yeah.
In a small enough town to just kind of be in your face. But I didn't have a resentment when I was there. I guess I didn't have anything to really compare it to as far as, we'd visit family in Chicago, but it's not like I hung out downtown Chicago with like my friends and was like, this is where I should be. I just sort of had this feeling that Iron Mountain's all I knew. And you know, I enjoyed growing up there. I never had a resentment necessarily or a desire to get out. It was once I got out and then sort of started to find my way down here that I realized, man, it's getting harder and harder to think about myself moving back.
It's pretty much exactly the same as it was for me. Like once I moved, it was like, oh wow, like there's a lot to offer in other areas.
Yeah.
But I never really had like a resentment of growing up there. I know a lot of people that did though, like just hated growing up in that small town atmosphere and like kind of couldn't wait to like get out and move to a bigger city.
Yeah, I mean, it seems really oppressive in a way, because if you're not built for it or it's not your personality, it's kind of a nightmare. Like if you're craving like Brooklyn or Manhattan or something and you're in the UP, I mean, that's a very different environment.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to go a long way just to get to Chicago, and that's...
Well, and I don't think it was a place that allowed for much diversity in terms of personality either. So I remember like we were pretty, and this is an interesting thing maybe we could talk about too, is like we were pretty involved in like a music scene. Mm-hmm. You know, like all of my friends played in bands and we'd go to their shows. And whenever there was a show, it was really exciting. And it was a place where you could hang out and be like, hey, everybody here isn't doing like the Youper thing. Like we're not at a camp.
Yeah.
We're like at a place to like enjoy punk rock music or enjoy like indie music and hang out and be ourselves and kind of dress a certain way. Like I really appreciated that those times because it was like we built this little subculture that really wasn't there before. No. I mean, it wasn't, and you know?
Probably isn't there now. I don't know. I haven't.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't know if there's like, I mean, there's got to still be kids like in high school forming bands and stuff because that's always happened. Garage bands and whatnot. But like, I feel like as far as like, oh, you know, getting like a bunch of bands to play together at the Elks Club for a weekend, like, I don't know if that happens a lot anymore. But it definitely seemed like it didn't before we were in like middle school and high school. It's kind of like a little bubble that like, I don't know how it, where it came out of.
But just... And I think that where I think it came out of partially was like our... Like, hey, we need something to do.
Looking for something different.
Something different. And like connecting with the bands we connected with and everything, because it was like, this feels more authentic with like what I feel as a human being than just being completely satisfied with like hunting and fishing. Mm-hmm.
You ever kill a deer, Kip?
No, I never killed. Well, no, I've never killed a deer, but I've definitely caught a few fish. Yeah. That's my
thing. Right?
I have once.
Yeah. Okay. How many horns did it have?
Six.
Why do you postulate this question to us?
Well, it keeps coming up, and I was just curious. Yeah. I mean, I grew up hunting, and I never shot a deer. I don't think that I ever had it in me. I don't think I ever had the intention of shooting anything, but I hunted just because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. I like to go up to my deer camp and be with my dad and share that experience without ever feeling like this is something that I could ever get pleasure out of. Mm-hmm. You know, but it was... Just because you keep bringing it up, because it is actually a very big part of culture in the UP.
I grew up hunting and fishing too, but I don't really do either anymore, at least not frequently.
Just curious.
Mm-hmm. So when you first left and then moved down here, what were your first impressions in terms of culture change? Maybe not culture shock, because that's probably a little bit too...
We got eased into it being in Allendale, or I did anyways.
It's a tiny farm town.
It's like a college and then a tiny, tiny farm town. I mean, there were less restaurants and bars than Iron Mountain.
Yeah. So. But certainly, like, much more diverse culturally. I mean, obviously a lot more people, but just a... way larger cross-section of different types of people. Like, pretty, like, homogenous up in the UP. Like, everyone's just, like, white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, or Catholic, or, you know, like... Just not very much cultural diversity or ethnic diversity in the UP, really.
One thing I thought was kind of weird... Ryan, you guys can tell me what you think about this. I thought it was, like, way more religious down here. Which is kind of
absolutely
odd because
West Michigan is very...
That is not just the South, but it's like a West
Bible
Michigan.
Belt here.
But isn't that kind of weird? Because you think like the UP being so conservative would be like a very Christian place. Mm-hmm. But it really, I mean, for me it wasn't.
A lot of Catholics because of the Italian population, I think.
Yeah. At least in Iron Mountain.
Yeah. Which in my experience of the UP is, I mean... It's Iron Mountain, Kingsford, Norway. I mean, I couldn't tell you what it was like to grow up in Escanaba. I would imagine that there's some parallels, but I wonder how much our experience growing up in the UP is really just our experience growing up in Iron Mountain.
It's one town.
And maybe like you talk to a group of kids that grew up in Marquette or Escanaba or Munising and listen to them talk and be like, whoa.
You know, I don't think that's true though, Joe. No. Because I have.
Well, I'm just saying. I wonder. Yeah.
Because I feel like I have talked to people. Like a good group of my friends are from Rudyard.
Oh yeah.
Which is like you know on the other side of the UP, mm-hmm. And we'll talk about a lot of this stuff we're talking about. And they, it's pretty much the same. Like, they talked about going out to camp.
Okay.
They, like, they are obsessed with Tommy Boy.
Like, who is it?
Well, that's just everyone.
But that's not true. Like, there's so many people I mean, they like have never seen that movie.
That's a
like,
good
that,
point. Nobody you know, down. I guess I. There was Tommy Boy is a big deal for you.
But the funny thing is because you watch these movies hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to do. Like, so that's what you did. Like, oh, let's just watch this again.
I just went and saw, we went and saw Dazed and Confused in the park last night. Yep. And that was probably like the 90th time I had seen that movie because I watched that growing
so
up.
So many times.
Yeah. But there was actually a lot of weird parallels to like small town UP life in that. Like, you know, party at the Moon Tower kind of a thing. Like, just like, let's all drive out to the woods, you know?
Mm-hmm. So one thing people might not think about is like how big of a deal basically drugs, substances, alcohol, anything like that is in the UP, because it's a huge problem. And since we've left, I've heard a lot about meth being up there, which was something that I never even at all had heard about when I was up there. But I certainly remember people that I knew, you know, growing up, kind of getting involved in that stuff pretty heavily at an early age.
Is that also part of like there's nothing to do, so it's like something to turn to?
That's how I've always looked at it. Like, it's just there's just nothing to do, so people get into drinking and drugs and but yeah, just like you would never expect some small town in the UP to have like a heroin problem, but there was a lot of people doing that. I mean, I never really knew anyone that was, but
I did. I had a handful of people that I would consider acquaintances, and you know, there were kids in high school that you knew were doing heroin, you know, or again at camp parties, and it's, I guess maybe there's just not an outlet, and despite the isolation, you know, drugs were prevalent. That's another thing. I mean, people were bringing them in from, you know, basically. I'm guessing Chicago, Milwaukee. But yeah, it was a pretty serious issue.
Was it kind of like tolerated? Like you could see drugs at a party, like on a table, and everyone would just sort of accept it as being like a part of life?
Marijuana, I think, was more or less acceptable. Yeah. I don't remember ever seeing like people, you know, with cocaine out on the table.
No.
Yeah, I would say weed was pretty acceptable. I think there was kind of my interpretation of it was, there was kind of a division there, though. Like, there was the people who just kind of drank and stuff, and then there were the people who ventured into drugs, like weed, and then maybe ventured into pills, and then maybe ventured into other stuff. And it felt like I saw the weed and everything like that. I didn't see much beyond that.
You know?
Me either at all.
Like, I never, like, saw, like, you know, somebody being like, oh, I got this bottle of Xanax, like, I'm going to take it, or anything like that. Like, I knew what was going on, though, because I hear about it.
Yeah. You know? You know what I think is crazy? I think about this a lot. How acceptable drinking at such a young age was. Yeah. I think that's unique maybe to the UP as well. How acceptable it was to the point where, I mean, imagine high school dances or plays even, where you'd have a half day and a play would be the second half of the day. How many people would come in, go out on their lunch hour and get drunk or high and come back for the play. Like, I mean, that to me, looking back, is just absurd. But yeah, I remember it being half the high school dance, for example, would be, you know, clearly drunk.
Yeah.
And these adults, there's no way they didn't realize that.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of a thing that everyone knows goes on. Like, people start underage drinking at a very early age. Like, I was in, like, middle school probably the first time I drank beer.
Seventh grade, I think.
Yeah, like, and that's just pretty normal, whereas in other places I feel like that's very unusual. Like, people maybe start in high school or college. At least friends that I know that grew up in lower Michigan or Wisconsin. Like, that seems to be a pretty unique to the UP, or maybe just small town life, is like underage drinking and smoking pot and stuff like that is just very prevalent, widely accepted. Just kind of weird.
Yeah.
I think it connects to that piece of, I want to maybe go back to this, the piece about having nothing to do and the way of coping with that. Because if you, I could totally see if you don't feel like you have deep connections with your friends or you don't feel like, hey, this is like, I'm like happy enough in my family mm-hmm. or something. Like, I think the pathway to that stuff is a lot shorter than in a bigger city where yeah. maybe you can like go find a community or yeah. find something else. Like, there was no like outside community. There was no place for kids to go hang out.
No, not at all.
Like, zero. Like, I mean, it was either you were at a camp in the woods or you were at your house, mm-hmm. like with your parents.
Playing video yeah. games.
Or playing something. Video games yeah. like that. And or you're at the movie theater
yeah.
or Taco right. Bell. You know, I mean, those were like the four places you'd essentially go, and you'd rotate those places yeah. throughout your like high school years.
You yeah. know? It was, again, that big social machine up there mm-hmm. that for all the good, there was also some bad. You had that access because you were kind of forced into this, you know, just like any regular society, there was a society of like high school aged kids mm-hmm. that had little pockets of that. So it was easy. You'd already find yourself socially in that circle, if you will. And then that stuff was accessible. But mm-hmm. down here, if you're, like you said, if you have all of these outlets and your small group of friends, you know, you're not really in that situation unless you seek it out.
Mm-hmm. Keith, not growing up in like Iron Mountain, Michigan or a small mm-hmm. town UP, did you feel like you had like a ton of like access to a lot of different things to do as a kid, places to go, you and your friends?
I don't think I think I did, and I didn't appreciate it.
Okay.
I mean, looking back at it now, especially in comparison to like the way you're describing it, I realized like, I had all this stuff to do. We would jump on I-75, head like 10 minutes south and be at a Great Lakes Crossing. Mm-hmm. It's like this behemoth mall. And it's in a circle. I don't know if you've ever been there. So you can just walk endlessly. Obviously, you start to repeat yourself.
Yeah. But
so you could go to the mall with your friends and just walk forever. And so that's what you did. And then you mm-hmm. stop and dick around in a store, Hot Topic yeah. or whatever, and find like, you know, Frank Zappa t-shirts to like thumb through or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think there is the kind of monotony of I guess like whatever consumer life or suburban life. So you still kind of yearn to get out, or at least I did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know when I went off to Grand Rapids, it felt like a big city to me. I think if Detroit was a nice town, it would have been a lot different because I would have had the kind of the experience people have when they live in the suburbs around a big city. You get on the train or whatever, you drive down into the, you know, the metropolis mm-hmm. and it's like this different environment. But Detroit was kind of off limits, you know, as a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, whatever, you're sort of not supposed to go down there. So I never really had the big city experience that I think I otherwise would have had. So I don't know. There was more to do. I mean, I just listening to you talk about the drug use, like that sounds pretty typical, I think, for most places in America. Mm-hmm. I know there were some kids that would like leave during lunch and drink Robitussin back in the good old days when I had whatever that chemical was in there, and come back and float around. And so, I mean, we had the same kinds of problems, I think, too. Probably a lot of it's just universal, I think, just being yeah. young. You're still, it's a weird age to be like 17 because you're kind yeah. of an adult. You might have a job, you might have a girlfriend, you might be doing drugs, and yet you're living in your parents' house and you yeah. don't, you're a kid. It's a weird, like, yeah. era to navigate.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
One thing that I remember that some of the women talked about from our class when they came down, because we should probably offer a little bit of a female perspective here, if it's me just reporting a female perspective on this, is that I remember them feeling like a lot of the other women from downstate were really like stuck up.
Yeah.
And like saying that, and also feeling like all of a sudden they had to dress a lot nicer.
Like then they had like a competitive,
like the competition atmosphere. Like went up when they came down here. Cause I remember listening to conversations with our friend group, yeah. like coming back from college and then being like, yeah, I can't believe how much people care about like what kind of shoes you have on and like where your clothes come from down there. And that for me at the time kind of brought up this, holy crap. Like there is like a modestness
mm-hmm.
or like a rejection of bouginess,
much less in the like UP. Superficiality.
Yeah, and like a more focus on genuineness and who a person mm-hmm. is and like what they talk about and their intelligence and all that stuff as compared to like, oh, they're cool because they wear Abercrombie clothes or they're cool because they got like this really expensive purse.
Yeah, or like a really dope car or something. Yeah. Like it just...
yeah.
Yeah, there definitely was a lot less... the attitudes towards that kind of stuff, which is probably universal to all small towns. Like what do you have to offer as a person? Not like what kind of shoes.
What do you feel like going back though? Like when you go back, do you experience all that stuff in a positive way? Or is it more like, it's like, oh geez, this is a small place. And
I don't have at this point being, well, the sheer distance between Grand Rapids and Iron Mountain being about 8 hours and working, it's, I mean, for me anyways, it's get in the truck, drive home and spend time with my family and drive back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's rare that I go out. But whenever I do go out, it's crazy. I always see 15, 20 people that I know and haven't seen in years and can just pick up and talk with. There's yeah. still this group of people that, and it's not always people that just live in Iron Mountain still. There's people coming through for whatever reason on that weekend, but there's just always this, I mean, this social thing still exists no matter how long you've been away. Or when you happen to be in town. I don't know if you guys have the same experience when you go home, but
yeah.
going to, you know, Greenleafs was the place for a while. Yeah. Soul Blue, I think, is it now. But
yeah. Those are like bars up in the UP or in Iron Mountain. But I think that, I don't know, do you ever feel like a sense of resentment for the people that never left? Like, well, no. not me toward them, but like sometimes I feel like, ooh, there's like some tension when I like interact with people, like they're not as happy or something like that.
Yeah, I was just kind of never picked up on that. Because like if you're stuck there, I shouldn't say stuck.
A lot of the people that resent growing up there are the people that end up like never making it like out anywhere else. Yeah. Like they just live there their whole lives, kind of a thing.
Sure. I mean, I've noticed. I guess there's obviously a difference between someone who hasn't been able to get out and get on their feet, and I think that. You know, anyone who's in that situation is going to be unhappy, but I know a lot of people that are living in Iron Mountain that I guess I have always gotten the impression that, wow, I mean, they seem to be doing fine. They like it. I could probably do that.
It's very unusual for kids that I know from our grade would move somewhere for college, and then when they're done, it's very unusual for them to like move back to Iron Mountain and like start their life there. There's just not a lot of jobs available, and like, just at the age I'm at, there's just doesn't have anything to offer me, really. Like, I'm way more in tune with a city like Grand Rapids than I would be living in Iron Mountain. But, like, there's people that we know. Like, a good friend of ours is on the city council, is that right?
Yeah.
Right now, and, like, he's trying to make a lot of positive things happen. He's trying to introduce, like, more biker-friendly roads and just...
basically civil engineering the city,
trying to
make it better and make it a more attractive place.
And I think he's running into a lot of opposition just because people don't like change up there. Like, you know, we need four lanes of traffic because everyone drives on these roads. So he's trying to get the town into like modern times kind of. And I think he's kind of like having a hard time doing it.
Yeah.
That's but it needs to happen. Like,
yeah.
People like him need to move back there and do that for that kind of a community to thrive. Like it's a shrinking school district. Like it's not a dying town, but like jobs are leaving and people are moving out. Like I'm not going to move back. Like a lot of people aren't going to move.
They call it the like the brain drain.
Yeah.
Like all the people who get educated leave, you know, and then the people who aren't educated stay in the city. And I'm not saying people aren't educated.
No.
Because there's a lot of forms of education in this world outside of college or.
Absolutely. You
know. Well, Iron Mountain even has a community college.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even just like life experience and, you know, other types of things.
I mean, there's very talented, smart people that learn carpentry or something that are as a trade, you know, like construction or like civil engineering, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
People that work for like road construction crews and, you know, may not necessarily be college educated, but like are very smart people. But the college educated people seek jobs in other places, like bigger cities, because there just aren't a lot of opportunities to find jobs in a place like Iron Mountain.
Yeah, it depends on what you want to do for a career. A lot of times, you're right, it's just not an option in Iron Mountain. That profession that you want, that career you want, it just doesn't apply to the infrastructure in Iron Mountain, so you have to go elsewhere. I think that that's a big thing. I think it used to be normal to go away. You look at like just families in Iron Mountain. I grew up and family was such a big thing. There were all these huge families and people would go away to college, come back, get a job, and then start their own wing of the family. And I think that's happening less and less for whatever reason. You know, population is dwindling and
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to tie it back into to Kyle and what he's trying to do, you've got to make a place more attractive to young people, because if the young people leave, they're not making more young people and raising them in this town.
Right.
And it's going to become, you know, it could become more of a, you know, transient, some of these smaller UP towns. It can become more of that, whereas the Iron Mountain I grew up in was a real community and felt like a real town. Like,
yeah. Are there other towns that started off smaller that actually have died, where like basically it doesn't exist anymore?
I mean, Niagara. I mean, that's actually in Wisconsin, but it's on the UP border. They had a paper mill there, and the paper mill went under, and essentially the town is pretty much gone. I mean, there's, you drive through, there's still a town, there's a couple businesses and stuff, but you drive through, and it's like, it's on the downward slope. You know, it's, you like see tons of houses for sale, and there's nothing that's really going to save it. I mean, there's nothing drawing people there.
You have that, there's a lot of communities in the UP that have that one, you know, wood product plant or one paper mill, and that's where like everyone in the surrounding towns work.
Yeah.
So if that closes, like, that's a whole community of people that like have to probably move elsewhere to get work, you know, and and towns will kind of
our town is one of those towns because we have basically two major industries in Iron Mountain. One is the paper mill, and the other is the VA hospital or the hospital system, because we have the Dickinson County Hospital, and those are our major employers for our town. And if either one of those were to close down, I don't think the VA is going anywhere, but that paper mill has been on the edge of closing down quite a few times. Yeah. If that were to go under, it would have a significant impact.
It's changed ownership like a handful of times in the past 20 years, probably.
Yeah.
Like, it's always been there, and it employs a ton of people, but it's like kind of scary to think, like, what if that's not there? Like,
right.
Iron Mountain or surrounding towns could easily end up like Niagara, or even like, you know, go farther back like Calumet or something. Like, because I mean, going way back in history, there's a lot of like boom mining towns in the UP, like copper, iron ore, that were like these huge like boom communities. I think Calumet, Michigan, actually was originally going to be the capital of the state of Michigan because it was like the center of the economy and industry at the time. But as soon as like the mines were done, like that town was done.
Kind of. It's a place out of
there's
time.
A lot of little ghost towns that are kind of like the place time forgot.
And
they're really cool to go to because there's a lot of historic stuff there.
Yeah, it reminds me of stuff I've seen out like in Arizona, New Mexico. It's the same story, you know, like different. I guess it was oil, or I don't know what kind of mines it would be, but
gold maybe too.
Gold, we're like for 50 years or so they're profitable, but that's long enough for people to like have a kid and raise it. Like there's a little town, and then it's
even,
just gone.
Even Iron Mountain, like obviously
it's called
like
Iron Mountain,
iron ore mining. There's tons of like former iron mines that like you know you can go take tours of or. Just all over the place, abandoned iron mines.
And I would say that that has happened to Iron Mountain throughout our life as these industries have died off. Like Corey's Factory.
Oh, yeah,
used to be right across the street from my house. Was a major employer. Yeah. I think it employed like 500 people or something.
It sat vacant for a really long time, and they tore it down.
Yeah, and it was like, gone. Or like even a big business like Fleet Farm, you know, that was like this huge thing. It like goes out of business. And there's like 100 jobs gone. You know, every time that happens, it takes a little toll. And unlike Detroit or a city, you know, like Grand Rapids or a bigger city where you can have 300 factories close and like there's still a few more, it's like if, okay, we've got 10 to work with here. And if two of them go, the rest of them are gone.
It's like a fragile environment.
Yeah,
like, it's like losing that ecosystem. One factory or store, even if it's a smaller one, it's like a huge hit.
Absolutely.
You guys want to talk about the weird spectacle that is ski jumping?
Yeah.
Or ski jumps.
Yeah.
We should.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing.
How about just snowboarding culture, too, which is a huge thing, or like skiing and snowboarding culture?
Well, you come down here and people snowboard and they ski, and there's mountain, you know, ski hills, if you will. But people down here don't even know what ski jumping is as a sport in general. Let alone the fact that we have like
when
the World
Cup.
When we
say ski jumping, do you?
No, I just assume somebody on skis
like Olympic style ski jumping. You know, a gigantic ramp.
Like huge 20, ramp.
They go like 300 yards. You know, and they fly.
Yeah,
like,
I've only seen that on TV.
Okay. Yeah, there's a very big like winter recreational activities culture in the UP and Iron Mountain specifically, like very like right. skiing, snowboarding, snowmobiling, yeah. ski jump, stuff like that.
We have hotels that basically exist because ski jumping weekend, yeah. they'll be full. I mean, this yeah. is, we have this, it's, imagine, you know, five times the size of a Walmart parking lot, maybe. It's this field and it's just rows and rows of trucks and shacks. People like build like these little, you know, forts for the weekend, and then it's just this giant like, happy party.
Barrel with, fires and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's and essentially like a giant tailgate in the middle of like January, or is it maybe February? Like
yeah. February, yeah.
Super coldest part of the winter, yeah. like, but everyone's more than happy to just hang out outside all day long and yeah. like drink and like watch this kind of
spectacle
yeah. that like is kind of an unusual thing.
That sounds pretty cool. Who was actually jumping? Like,
people from all over the world?
It actually is.
The World Cup? Yeah. Is it every 4 years, the World Cup?
I think so. There's like different like I don't know what they call them.
Well, there's the Continental Cup, and every fourth year it's the World Cup. And then there's World Cup.
It's basically kind of like, you know, minor league baseball, major league baseball kind of a thing. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
There's different grades, but they're, you know, I think for a long time, the distance record holder on the hill was like a guy from Japan. Uh-huh. And I think for a while it was a guy from Germany. It's like, but it's yeah. like young kids. Like, yeah, they'll be yeah. like 16-year-old kids from all over the world that do that, like, competitively for a living, kind of. Uh-huh. Like, just go to any places that have ski jumps and do that. It's really cool to watch.
And we've got the biggest man-made, at least at one time, the biggest man-made ski jump in the world. It's yeah. kind of, other than Izzo Mariucci, it's our claim to fame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And the Bat Cave.
And the Bat Cave.
Second That's biggest yeah. Bat Cave in the world.
Yeah.
That's another funny, like, interesting thing is I grew up with so many bats around me in Iron Mountain.
Didn't you have like a weird, like, you hated bats?
Because
you
had that weird experience yeah. with bats. Like, okay, so little known fact, bats are very attracted to potpourri. So,
is that a fact?
This is a fact. So essentially what happened was me and my sister heard this because it smells like fruit. And like fruit bats sure. eat, yeah. and like fruit bats hang out in fruit trees, you know, like shocker,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and that's what's in Iron Mountain. There's a lot of apple and pear trees everywhere,
a lot
right?
of bats.
And so anyway, my backyard had like between me and my neighbor probably like 10 trees, you know, and me and my sister, for whatever crazy idiotic reason, decided to like spray ourselves down with potpourri. And like literally,
I'm
like,
always a great idea.
Spray ourselves down and go outside and just see like, oh, hey, like, okay, let's just like walk around. And we got dive bombed by bats.
Well, that's what
and,
you wanted, right?
Well, I guess. I think we thought maybe like, we were like, oh, they're going to land on our hand and like hang upside down. You know? Like, just idiotic like thought process. And I remember we had to like dive under a laundry basket. Like me and my sister were like holding this laundry basket and we had to run back into the house because these bats, and they were hitting the top of the laundry oh basket. God, yeah. So
giant pieces of fruit, finally.
Yeah, like that's what they thought. So for those out there listening, word from the wise, do not spray yourself down with potpourri.
If you're afraid of a certain animal, don't put that animal's favorite food all well, over yourself and bait
no,
them.
I wasn't afraid before then. It was after that I was afraid.
Like, I just covered myself in blood and meat and I walked into the jungle. He's lying.
And then you're traumatized because they actually did exactly what you knew they were going to do.
You lived in the wrong place to be afraid of.
That's part of growing up.
Afraid of the bats before that.
I don't see why that would be traumatizing.
That reminds me of like my uncle's like pocket knife and being like, yeah, I'm gonna do it, and just like cutting my finger and being like, oh, why did I do that? It's like part of growing up. You just yeah.
Or like putting your tongue in a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when you're like,
that's exactly what I thought
was gonna happen.
I don't know why I thought that would turn out any different.
Yeah,
you do it like three times.
Yeah. Or like the touching your tongue to the battery thing. It's like, it's going to electrocute yeah. you. Oh, it did.
Maybe like this thing.
That's really
funny. I kind of forgot about the like bat population because I yeah. don't see a lot of bats down here.
Yeah, you don't realize like, it's because there's billions of them.
Like when I was in high school, I worked at like a Kmart and we had a constant issue of bats flying into the store
yeah.
and then just flying around all over inside the store. And like, it was always kind of an exciting thing to
yeah.
like, we would, like, they'd like call like, you know, the young high school kids and it was like, oh, like, let's go grab some fishing nets from, like, Sporting Goods and just, like, chase this bat around the store until we catch it.
We did the same thing. Like, we did the same thing in Super 1.
Yeah, it was, like, one of my favorite things to do at work, actually. Yeah. It was always kind of exciting.
Well, maybe last topic, wrapping this podcast up. What do you think we would have to do to save the UP? To, like, keep it sustainable, to, like, bring people there. I mean, I'm not taking turn it into New York City. But, you know, like, to make Iron Mountain maybe, like, a Green Bay-style city, or to just turn the city around and make it, like, hey, this is going to last, you know, beyond, like, so that our kids could potentially go there, or their kids' kids, you know, could go there. What do you think it needs?
I don't know. I mean, I think tourism is, like, such a huge part of, you know, just having the Great Lakes around Michigan and the UP. Like, tourism's such a huge thing, and I think that... And there really is a big focus on that, like the Pure Michigan ads and stuff. Like, they really are letting people know, like, there's really beautiful shores and stuff to come visit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, focusing on that, I think, is really important. Because there's just not a lot.
You hate to say tourism, but that's the first thing that came to mind. You hate to say it because there's enough of that as it is, and it's not. I don't think that tourism is enough to sustain a, you know, a whole region, you know, the entire Upper Peninsula.
And the people that are living there don't necessarily want a lot of tour. Like, you know, like, there's a part of me that's like, keep the UP a secret, you know? Like, we don't want Pure Michigan ads that's like, oh, come to, like, Pictured Rocks because it's amazing. And it really is, but it's like, I don't want, like, a ton of people going there.
Yeah, it's a good way to so kill, like, something on accident while you're trying to save it would be to, you know, oversaturate it with tourism, you know, turn it into one big camp.
Well, and
camper.
I don't think we're there. I don't think we're
not at all.
I think we got a long spectrum to cross, you know, before we were to get there. But because I'm a big advocate of, like, utilizing our tourism more effectively. Like,
but that doesn't necessarily get people moving there and living there. And I wouldn't have any idea how to kind of solve that problem. Because
one thing I think about a lot too is industry that isn't based on geography. Mm-hmm. So I think about tech industry. And I, like, there's no reason we couldn't have coders, people like programming computer code in the UP, as long as they have an internet connection. I mean, they could be working for Google or for Facebook in the UP or anywhere else. So I think about, like, Amazon setting up these companies and all, you know, people doing these little entrepreneurial things with these, like, startup companies. And there's no reason none of those couldn't happen. We just don't think of it because it's like, oh, that's something that happens in these big cities.
Yeah.
But they can happen anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If a group of coders who were, like, really talented, you know, went to Michigan Tech and then just went somewhere in the UP and were like, oh, we're going to have a startup business. I think of one of the coolest businesses, I'm going to give them a free advertisement right now, is that Uper Shirts up in Ishpeming.
Sure.
Like, they sell like all the really, really cool, like, hip.
I actually have one of their
shirts. Me too. Like, I have a hat and a shirt. And because that's, like, a cool idea, it's like, hey, let's not just sell the traditional wishing well Uper clothing that's like a bear or a wolf on it.
Yeah.
It's like UP Wild.
Like, this is pretty great, though.
Yeah. But instead, it's like, hey, let's modernize the idea of UP. People are proud of being from here, but they want something that doesn't look like, make them look like they're, like, 65-year-old men while they wear on, like, the big Johnson
shirts. And that's, you know, that's something you can, like, go online and I could order something and have it sent to me. A company that'll do that on a large scale, but is also just, like, I don't know where are they headquartered?
They're in Ishpeming.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've been to their store.
Really?
Yeah, it's really cool. So...
you gotta get away from the traditional industries that are dying, and young people. I mean, we're talking about saving something that maybe doesn't necessarily need saving yet, or maybe it never will. But young people need to come back with creative ideas. I think that young people really need to come back. I think that's key. Bringing creative ideas and changing things, because obviously there's these old industries that are dying out and going elsewhere, and you can't just force that to come back. I mean, you have to find a solution that's creative, and I think young people with these startups, like you said, I think that's got to be the future.
Yeah, and I've always thought, like, with Detroit, and I think it could work in Iron Mountain too, let's take some of these empty buildings and just be like, it's free if you come back and start a business here.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, that to me is, like, such an easy idea. Like, hey, let's take Fleet Farm It's an empty building, and let's just give it to somebody, or let's have the city buy it and be like, hey, if you build an industry in here that's like sustainable and is in one of these categories that we know are growth-oriented industries based on the economy right now, like, we will like fund you, or we will give you a tax break, or we will do something to make that happen. I think that that could work.
Sure.
Especially I think about like downtown Iron Mountain and being like, hey, we've got a costume shop. And we've got like a beauty salon that's been there for 75 years. And we've got like a wishing well store that sells Uper merchandise. You know, it's like these things that, that are not going to be sustainable. They're not adding to the city. So why not add some things in there? You know, I think a classic thing, I've advocated for this forever, is like put a Starbucks in Iron Mountain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like put, get us something like that that's going to draw people to an area. Okay. You
but
know?
Not Brian. Brian just went to his first Starbucks ever yesterday.
Congratulations. Is that absurd? What'd you think?
I got a like a green tea lemonade thing, and the guy gave it to me for free. It's cool.
That doesn't ever happen.
Right, the first one's free.
I had to explain to him that that's not how Starbucks normally is. He's like, it's great.
The UP is very like non-chain restaurant. Aside from like fast food, but I think like a Starbucks would do well.
Things can make it. Like I look at a couple businesses in Iron Mountain, for example. I think have been phenomenal. Moose Jackson Cafe has revitalized that area a little bit. Right across from there, they got that Sparrows restaurant, which is actually a good restaurant, a new restaurant that's surviving. They have an outdoor area. And those two businesses together, plus the fair stuff that they do, like the Hog Wild and the Italian Fest, has really brought that area was dead.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what was down there? The Advertiser or the new, like the newspaper or something like that, which is going to be dead eventually.
China Gardens.
Yeah, like, not much going on down there. And all of a sudden, they bring in these two businesses that do enough to revitalize the area. Then Blackstone Pizza opens up.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we got three, like, pretty decent businesses. And then Soul Blue kind of reinvents itself a little bit over there.
The Mexican restaurant that just opened up.
Like, exactly.
My mom just opened up a hair shop. This right is her there? First week operating right next to Gene K's pasties. All right,
throw a plug for her.
Yeah. Check it out. Yeah. I don't know if she's taking clients. I don't know. It's just
but it shows, instead of putting another used car dealership in the Moose Jackson lot next to City Hall or another Citco gas station, we put something in there that people are like, hey, this is a common place to hang out. It has good food. It's a little bit higher end, which is something we don't have. And boom, all of a sudden, two or three more businesses can open up.
I think a brewery with like good food would be great for a town like Iron Mountain.
Which the craft brew thing took so long to migrate up to Iron Mountain just because of distribution. And it's there now, and you have a place like Soul Blue that, you know, it's as good as most places down here as far as beer selection is concerned. I think that that's like the logical next step.
I think Escanaba has like, what is it, North Hand or Upper Hand?
Upper Hand, yeah.
Which just opened, but that's like, there's like people our age that are working there and like living there.
Well, that's
like,
the thing, you make it attractive for young people to come back.
And hang out there and like.
Right.
The more hip, and I say, use that term loosely, but the more comfortable Iron Mountain is to live in, the more there is to do as a young adult. You know, the more the community embraces that age group, the more people that are going to move back, because I wish I was living a lot closer to my family. And I think that's a huge draw for people to come back, but a lot of people don't because they know, you know, I'm not going to like it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other side of that, Jilda, you remember you saying like earlier, like people wouldn't want to go up there and work. I think for your and I's profession, for example, being a psychologist and a lawyer, we actually have the opposite problem that it's like, I don't want to go up there and be the only psychologist. I know there's more lawyers in town, but it's like, oh my God, I don't want to work that hard and be like the person who like I do all the workers' comp cases. You know what I mean? It's like, holy crap. Like, and that's my fear of going back there is all of a sudden, first of all, I'm going to see like a million people. I mean, I'll make plenty of good money and stuff, but I don't, and then I'm like in this tiny town as a psychologist, and the patients and clients I'm working with are everywhere around me all the time.
Yeah.
So that's like what kind of pushes me out of it is like, I wouldn't mind actually going up there and living that much, but I just don't want that role within the city.
Sure. It's, I think of, you know, the confrontational nature of law, for example. It would be strange to be in such a small community where you know every single person that you would ever, which, I mean, it's a good thing. You learn how to argue against someone while not being
a jerk,
basically. Yeah. But to, you know, see your clients. I hear a lot of stories about people that, especially if you're in criminal law and prosecuting attorney, for example, you see those people out in public, you know, the people who you had to put in jail for doing something stupid. And it just seems like it would be a really tough corner to be in that I don't know if I'd like that.
Yeah. And that's a difficult thing. You know what I mean? Like, and I think about if I had to like hospitalize somebody against their will or something like that, same kind of thing, you know,
right. You just do that all the time down here. And it's just like, yeah, whatever. I'll never see that guy again.
Yeah, no, I don't. I act very ethically as a psychologist. So, all right, everybody. So how did you think the conversation went?
Good. Are we still doing it?
Oh, this is a wrap up.
Oh, okay.
Wrap up time.
Yeah, all right.
Wrap up time.
So far, so good.
Do you feel like you learned anything?
I'll let you know after the wrap up.
Yeah. Do you feel like you learned anything about, like, from listening to other? I feel like I learned a lot, like, in our conversation. Kind of understood my hometown a little bit better.
Yeah, like, just had conversation that I never really had about UP or stuff I just hadn't thought of.
Yeah, it was interesting for me to just kind of sit and listen, because it's like hard to ask questions when you didn't grow up there and you don't sort of know the right questions to ask.
Yeah.
But it reminded me of, like, I imagine maybe California, because it's so long. If you grow up in San Diego, it's a very different experience than growing up on, like, the border of Oregon or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know the UP, you know? It's like, it's my home state, but it's kind of like a different state to me, you know? Separated by a lot of water, and, like, it is sort of a different landmass. And it's interesting to listen to you guys talk about it.
Yeah.
The camp thing I like the most. Because that, like, UP, you described it well enough that I had, like, a movie in my head of, like, driving through the snow and the car getting stuck and opening up the gate. And, like, that was so different than my experience. It seemed really cool.
I remember one time, Joe, I don't know if you were there or not, but one person tried to steal a keg from a camp, like, to bring it to a different camp, and somebody came out with a gun. And it was literally, like, bring that back. And, like, it was, like, out of a movie, you know?
It was
like, a gun
there.
Was on this car, and they, like, opened up the hatchback, and they caught their keg back.
I never even heard about that, which is surprising.
Another thing you don't think of is, like, there's also, like, hunting rifles and stuff out at these camps.
Yeah.
Just everywhere, but everyone's very, like, comfortable.
Yeah, well, there you learned a certain respect for firearms.
Yeah.
I mean, that just comes with the hunting culture, that you could have 100 drunk teenagers.
I didn't believe that happened, though.
And, there's and there's, like, gun cabinets, and, like, it's never an issue.
And never once. Brian, I remember there was a gun cabinet right in the room we used to play on your big screen TV.
Yeah.
Not once did we ever, even for a second, think, let's go get the guns
absolutely
out and play
not.
With them.
Yeah, because, like, you know that that's just bad news. Like,
I didn't even think about it.
Yeah,
like, guns were so much around us.
Yeah.
It was like, it would be the same thing of, like, why don't I get this kitchen knife and start juggling it?
Yeah.
Like, I would never even
exactly.
thought to do that, you know?
Like, but, like, yeah, if you see something as, like, a forbidden object, your first instinct is like, well, I've got to figure out this object. I've got to hold it in my hands and, like, when no one's looking. But it was just so much, like, part of the background.
That's
how
Lil Wayne gets shot in the chest. So
you
just don't go anywhere near that.
It always comes back to Lil Wayne with you.
At the end of the day, Lil Weezy in his duffel bag. Anyway. Yeah, I just thought that was such a bizarre, I don't know, that was such an interesting thing. So whenever we hear these gun debates and stuff, or you see, like, the video or the commercial on the internet, or the guy, like, or the commercial on TV, the guy smoking weed and then, like, picking up the gun and, like, shooting himself or whatever, I was always like, okay, like, I've been around plenty of people stoned in my life in these places, and nobody would ever think to walk over to the gun cabinet, take out a gun.
Well, that's because we grew up in the UP. Down here, that happens all the time.
I don't know. It's such a weird thing.
Take one hit of that reefer, and it's a big problem down here.
Yeah, that's a really weird thing. It's very, very odd. I always remember that other drug commercial, the one where the little girl on the bike in front of the fast food, like, driving, and she
cut
off before she got hit, you know?
How about do you remember the Angel Dust one where the guy just runs and jumps through, like, a plate glass window? I think it's up like a 4-story building.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if that was a PSA or an after school. It might have been an after school special, but I just remember the guy does angel dust. I don't even know how you do angel dust. I don't think they show it. Like, I don't know if he's snorting or smoking, whatever, but then he just sprints out a window.
The only after school special I remember is Garfield and the Cartoon All-Stars.
All-Stars against drugs, dude. Yeah, I used to have that on VHS.
Terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
I actually smoked pot and watched that one time when I was in college.
Oh, my God. That's terrifying.
It was great.
Yeah, that's hilarious. So, all right, everybody. That's going to wrap up the big, fat episode 30. Another milestone episode in the Midwestern Social Scientist. I want to take a second to thank Brian and Joey for being on in the conversation today and helping me and Keith out with our big episode 30. I hope you guys had a good time.
I did. Thank you, guys.
It was a great time.
All right, everybody. So that's going to wrap up the episode. Thanks a lot for listening. See you next week.
Hey, guys, if you enjoyed the show, check out Kip and Keith on Facebook at Midwestern Social Scientists. You can also tweet them at hashtag Midwestern Social Scientists. Or you can check out their Podomatic page, which is the first place the episodes get released. Don't miss out. Yeah, just check out their Facebook, okay? Thanks.